Welcome to the NEDCO 504 Show. I'm Scott Sailors with Jason Culver and Will Sailors. Let's get started. Welcome to the show, Andrew Dewey, Dewey's Computer Services, Inc. He can be found on the World Wide Web at Dewey.biz. That's Dewey.biz. And the phone number local in Nebraska is 402-475-3839. That's 402-475-3839. And good worldwide as well. For Dewey's Computer Services, they offer reliable IT service for small business. They offer computer and network support services, computer hardware sales and service, just to name a few. If I had to think of three words to describe the Dewey Computer Services Company, it would be reliable, affordable, and knowledgeable. We speak from experience here at NEDCO, as Andrew and the Dewey Computer Company are our exclusive providers of everything. And let's list just a few things on the everything list, soup to nuts. They are in charge of our computers, computer software, service maintenance, security, our telephone system, podcast production, just to mention a few. It's almost like having a Fortune 500 company IT professional on staff. So with that, we have Andrew Dewey in the studios today. Very glad to have him here to answer all questions about his business and about computers in general. Also in the studio, Will and Jason and our computer engineer, Cody. So with that, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. Really appreciate it and looking forward to sharing knowledge.
Great. Andrew, let me throw out the first question here, as we like to know from all of our guests, is how did you get started in the computer business? People are always curious as to how people found their way into their professions.
Well, really, it's all my dad's fault. my dad's a contractor, and he's run his own business forever, and I got some of the business background from him. But he bought a computer when I was about 10, and he refused to learn how to run it. He expected you to turn it on and it would just do things for you. And that really didn't happen. I turned it on and I wanted to play games. And so I sat down with the book. I read the book and I figured out how to play my games. And I talked to his friends that knew a little bit more about computers and kind of taught myself. So by third grade, I was going into school and asking the teacher, like, hey, can I have a copy of that program? Here's how you pirate it. I wasn't quite aware that's what I was doing at the time, but really got kicked off that way.
Huh. Interesting.
Then, as I kind of grew, I started helping friends' parents with computers. They'd give me dinner, and that was great. And then in high school, I realized you can only eat dinner so many times a night. So we made up an hourly rate, turned it into a full company, and kind of grew it that way.
Wow. How many years have you been in business?
23 years now.
23 years. Wow. Jason.
I'm sorry. You said by third grade? Well, you were doing this?
By third grade, I was encouraging my teachers to make a copy of that for me. Yeah. That looks really cool.
I believe that.
Now, these weren't punch cards. They were floppies.
Oh, yes. This was floppies, and I had the full instructions. I'm like, here's a program that'll make a copy of that one that they make really hard to copy. So if you can just use that, that'd be great.
I mean, in third grade, I was just enjoying Oregon Trail and, not dying of dysentery when you ford the river.
So, Andrew, when a lot of things, when people starting their own business, the hardest part is getting started. So did you have a day job and you started Dewey Computer Business on the side? And then once that grew enough, you jumped into that full time? Or how exactly did that work? Because I think that's the biggest issue with people when starting their small business is how to get it started and when to make it their full time job.
You know, for me, that was the way that I did it. I had a full-time job. I was working as a computer programmer. And so the moonlighting on the side not only did not conflict, but also strengthened what I was doing at that job. And so they were all for it. And I worked with them. Eventually, my small little company that I worked for got bought by a bigger company. And I went from great management that loves you and doesn't pay much to not so great management at the bigger company that paid better, and realized I got a lot more from that business education than anywhere else. After I'd been there for a few years, it was clear that we were kind of butting heads with some of the management, and it made time to make a switch. So at that point, I had so much work, such a backlog ready to go, that I was able to jump out and start catching up on that backlog and get things going. So just kind of grew it organically that way when I got started.
So the catalyst was when the company you were working for got taken over. And then after being there a little while, you thought it's time to forge your own path.
It is actually 1 year after the buyout, I was still working there. And I looked down and I said, I really don't like working here. I like my immediate team, the team that came over with me, but there were some things that just I didn't like about the company in general. And I put a quit date on my calendar 12 months from that date and said, hey, I'm going to work towards this because I can't do it now. I got a wife and a family and a house payment and car payments, and I can't do that. But I know that in 12 months I want to. So I put that on my calendar and I worked towards that. And then actually, as we were getting towards that, management made some changes that made the decision really easy. So my immediate boss, Bill Sheldon, love him to death and still would love to work with him to this day. But the upper management and didn't have the same philosophies.
So during that 12-year time period when you were working your day job for the big company and working on Dewey's computer business on the side, you had to have been working a lot of hours.
Absolutely. And because I don't like to sleep, I was also going to school almost full time. So I was taking night classes at the university. And then on the nights that I wasn't going to school, I was working and working on the weekends and just kind of worked through it. But one of the things that that helped me a lot is that my dad has been running his own company since I was a wee lad. And my grandpa ran his own company, and it was a lifestyle. And the lifestyle was you got done when the work got done, not at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so that was just the way that I understood was normal as I got things off the ground.
And I think that's the hardest part for small business owners or aspiring entrepreneurs is how to initially get it started going from zero to one. How do you get there? That's the hardest jump. But speaking of you in school full-time, what are all the qualifications that you have? What schooling and background do you have besides being self-taught on some of that in third grade? You obviously have a computer background and other qualifications.
Well, my background, I ended up getting my bachelor's of business. And so I've got a business administration degree and picked up math minors and computer science minors along the way as I kind of explored my way through the engineering program. Realized I didn't like that, and found that business really clicked and it worked well. On the technical side, most of it is self-taught, and that's one of the things that we look for when we're looking for technicians is someone who can teach themselves, someone who can roll with the punches and figure it out, because what we need to know today, there's no manual for. We're writing the manual as we go forward, because in technology, it's changing so fast. By the time you have it in a book, 5 years later, it doesn't apply. And so most of what I have, I've picked up over the years from the School of Hard Knocks.
Wow.
Jason.
Yeah. You know, kind of going back to what you talked about, making that first leap, how was that first year? You know, something we talk with businesses or with the entrepreneurs, and sometimes taking that leap from the steady paycheck to the unknown, that first year isn't always, you know, just a straight ramp up of income and everything goes great.
It was very scary. I remember looking at my calendar on a Monday morning and there was nothing on it. And I had done the math that in order to survive, I needed to bill so many hours per day. And half of that, of course, would be turned around and given to expenses and the government. And so I had my numbers that I needed to hit. And I just remember looking, you know, on Monday morning going, I don't know how I'm going to even pay the rent. And then things would fill in over the course of the week through networking and through back projects. And everything, for the most part, worked out pretty well. I don't know if I can share the dirty secret, but I financed the whole company on a credit card. And really, especially wow. That first year as we were getting going, most of our personal expenses went on the credit card and racked that puppy up. Because at that point, I don't know that I was someone that you would give a loan to because I didn't have that credit history. I didn't have those things. Mm-hmm. And so we did it that way. And then later we wrapped that into refinancing, and then later we paid that off. But that first year was definitely exciting.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
How
old were you when that first year?
I was probably 23, 24, right in there.
Wow.
Well, married, yep. with kids?
Married with one kid and a mortgage.
Wow. Andrew, let me ask you this. In regards to your marketing and your business development in those early stages, so you wake up and you have an empty calendar, and then has the development trend and the transformation of your business been word of mouth?
Yep. Most everything that we have done has been through word of mouth. At that time, we did some crafty social marketing. And by that, I went down to Valentino's, bought a bunch of pizzas, and took it down to the local internet service provider's help desk. And I popped down, four pizzas. And I fed the geeks there, because those are the guys taking calls all day, every day. And all they can do is help them with their internet. But a lot of times there were bigger problems. And so I advertised in their newsletter, did a little bit of advertising here and there. But a lot of that networking and the food networking went so very far towards those guys that were happy to say, hey, the problem is not with your internet. The problem is with the modem and the computer, and we don't do that. But here's a company that will. And finding those companies that we have a symbiotic relationship with really helped us to grow the company.
Yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. A couple of notes, and then I'll turn it back over to Will and Jason. You take as I said earlier, Dewey Computers is our exclusive provider of all things computer securities, phones, production of this podcast as well. How do you? There's a niche in this business, apparently, because there's the guys that work out of their houses, and the upstart people that have no clients. They do just a little bit, almost like a hobby. And then there's this mid-range of business, like an Edco's, maybe a mid-range to a large, our company here that you do all the work for. And then there's the huge companies, a GM or a Kellogg's or something like that. But the niche that you have in the mid-range is a very rare thing, that you can come in and somebody knows every piece of the business that we call up. If our computers don't work, we call. If our emails don't work, we call you. If the phones don't work, we call you. And I would suggest for those small businesses out there, both worldwide and locally at our local podcast, that when you're looking at that that big, really huge computer service company, you might want to look at something like the Dewey Company that would be affordable, knowledgeable, and you need that personal service as well. So do you find that to be the case? I mean, there's a lot of people that want to get in your business, but they don't want to quit their day job either. They don't want to risk it all.
We definitely see a lot of moonlighters, and that's fine when you're getting started. When you're small and you've got, a computer or two, but you can live without it for a couple of days if it breaks, that's where that part-time IT person kind of helps and fills in those gaps. But once you become a professional company and you've got staff and you realize your entire world revolves around the computer, then you need a professional support company. And so whether it's us or not, we would encourage everybody out there to find an IT partner, not just a company that you call when it's broken, but a company that you work with on an ongoing basis. One of the things that companies like ours bring to the table is that we know what the trends are doing. We know where things are going, and we're going to help you to stay ahead of that. Whether it's little things like, hey, that computer is 5 years old and it's costing you more in your time waiting for it to turn on and turn off than buying a new computer, or whether it's looking at, hey, does it make sense to get rid of your servers and move to the cloud? Those are things that we live and breathe. And we live and breathe that for all of our customers collectively, so we can bring that knowledge and skill to each individual customer beyond what they would have the skills for in-house.
Well, that's a great way to describe it. Is in our situation here is you're an IT partner, and as you're telling people to find that partnership, as of all things business, if you don't have a good computer person, you're sunk.
That's
it's not going to work.
that's one thing a lot of companies kind of miss as they're getting going. They're really good at doing something, whether they're good at doing tile or whether they're good at doing finances or you've got your CPA. They're really good at something, but they need a stupid computer to make it work. And that's our job, is to take care of the stupid computers so you can do your job. But as you know, for instance, one of the things that we're seeing, one of the trends right now, is so many things are moving to the cloud. Instead of having a bunch of servers in your office, now you're using somebody else's servers. That's great, but what happens when your internet goes down? And so we're talking to our businesses and going, hey, if you're really heavily relying upon your cloud-based programs, maybe you need a second internet. Maybe you need a second firewall. It's going to cost you a little more every month, but the first time it goes down for a day and you've got a backup, it'll be worth every penny. And that's something that we see on a regular basis, is an internet connection goes down, there's a backhoe sitting in your parking lot and a big hole in the ground where your internet cable just used to come through. And it's going to take them a little while to get that fixed.
Yeah.
So when you're going around to businesses, what businesses, large or small, what is the biggest thing that overall most businesses are missing or need to upgrade with their systems?
Probably the biggest thing is security across the board. When you're a small business, you can get away with remembering the passwords that are in your head and using the same password for five things. But as you start to grow, you need things like password managers. You need things more elaborate email security. You need things like the two-factor authentication to make sure that when you remote into your computer and it's nice and easy, you're not making it easy for the people in China. So a lot of times security kind of gets forgotten about, because it's never a problem until it's a problem. And that's one of the things that an IT partner is going to bring to the table, is they're going to look at it and say, hey, it's really great that you're able to remote in from home. What did you do to secure that? And most business owners go, I don't know. I pushed the buttons until it worked, and now I can do my stuff. And as your IT company, we're going to go, hey, let's find one of three different ways to lock that down so that you don't have the evil people from China remoting in and going through your computer systems when you don't want them to.
Would you say most businesses are undersecured then?
Yes, I would say that pretty much every business is undersecured, and it's really a balancing act. Security is a continuum. On one end of the scale is absolutely usable and no security. You walk up, you type, it works, and then you walk away. And on the other end is almost completely unusable, where you have to pass a fingerprint scanner, an iris scanner, put your smart card in, put in your 274-letter password that changes every 3 hours, pull out your extra security, and it's barely usable. And finding that sweet spot is somewhere in the middle. We find, you know, your average contractor doesn't need as heavy graded security, but when you're looking at, for instance, CPAs are a huge target right now, and accountants, because they have everybody's information. They have their tax information. They have the name of all of your kids and your social security numbers. They're a huge target, and those are folks that need to really up their game when it comes to security. So if your remote access is really easy and not asking any extra questions, if your phone doesn't confirm that it's you, or if there's not those extra steps, then it's something that you really need to talk to your IT partner about and go, hey, are we secure enough?
Mm-hmm. Curious, with what you see on security issues, is it more common to run across the hackers from Russia and China, or is it the people out there that go, oh, I got hacked? Well, no, your password was password. What did you think was going to happen? The internal stuff, the bad employees, stealing data they probably shouldn't. Is it the external, the internal, or a little bit of both?
It's primarily the external, but they get to it through the internal. So one of the things that we talk about is security awareness training, and that's where we're training your employees in the office what to look for, phishy emails or things that are out of place. So a really quick story. We had a company that we work with, and the president's email account got hacked. Somebody got his password, got into it. went through his sent items and saw this email where he had sent the accounting staff an email that said, I need you to wire $40,000 to these people. Here's the account number. Make it happen. And that was a legitimate payment because that's how they pay their bills, and it was a really big number. And so the attacker went and took that same email, copied, pasted, sent it to the same person, changed the account number, and said, I need you to send $40,000 to these people. And because it was copied and pasted, it had the same voice. It sounded or read just like the owner had sent it. And, you know, those are the types of things that we need to train all of our staff to look for and go, wait a minute, I don't recognize that account number. I want to take an extra look at these things. Because in that particular case, that was a really dangerous one because the email really, really came from the owner's email account. And so it passed all the checks. It cleared all the spam filters. And it sounded like the owner because they copied the text exactly and just changed a few details on it. Thankfully, that one was caught before the transfer got processed. But we see these on a regular basis. And so it's the external actors that are nasty people. Another similar story, somehow an attacker got a copy of the direct deposit form for this company. There was a new employee whose name was in the newspaper. You know, you do your press releases. And so they filled out a copy of this. They forged the return email address of the new employee and sent it to HR with the attacker's bank account information and included the verbiage. They said, hey, go ahead and skip the pre-check on this. We need to get this done. And because this person was a big, important person whose name gets put in the press release, they went ahead and processed it and sent his paycheck off to another account. So it's those external, it's the bad actors. And one of the things that I'd love to kind of share with everybody is it used to be, you know, when I got into this 20, 30 years ago, it was, you know, some kid in his parents' basement who hadn't taken a shower in 6 months and hated the world and wrote a virus to make your life terrible. And it was defeatable. And we had antivirus software that caught it and cleaned it up. These days, we're looking at organized crime. It's not in this country, which means it's very difficult to prosecute. But this is a full-time job for the criminals. They're going through, they're buying and selling information. And everyone talks about the dark web and the dark side of the internet. It exists, and they're buying a list. And so if your password gets stolen today, they sell that on a list full of passwords to other people with, say, financial services. And they sell that to another gang, if you will, that specializes in financial services fraud. Same thing goes with medical. And if they don't find any value in it, then they put the ransomware on. They lock your computer and they hold it for money. So that's kind of the adversary that we're facing. They're professional, they're organized, and they're always changing because every day they're going, hey, we sent that out yesterday, but people are getting wise to it. So today we're going to change it up.
Wow. Andrew, have you ever worked directly with a client where their computers were taken over and they loaded on the ransomware and they were being extorted for money?
Unfortunately, we have. We've worked with a couple. We had one where...
That'd be the worst case scenario here.
It absolutely
is. Devastating.
You know, and that's, again, looking towards your IT partner, they should have backups. They should have 12 different types of backups, and they should be monitoring that those are working. So one of the places where we saw it, we did have backups and lost about a day as all of the systems were wiped and reloaded and restored from those backups. So we've definitely seen it, and it's a scary thing. One of the security protections had expired, and the person that got the email just ignored it. And so the system went unprotected for a short period of time. Yeah. And that's when the attackers got in. The fortunate thing is it was before the trend of data stealing. So they didn't get in and steal the information. They just locked it all up. So we erased everything. We had a backup and had almost zero data loss out of the incident.
Wow.
So that's on the security side. How about on the hardware side for small businesses? How long would you say an average computer would last? Medium use, you know, nothing that's doing hard programming or anything, but like for a tile company or a general contractor, like you said, how often should they expect to be upgrading their equipment? From my experience, it seems that equipment in the technical world becomes obsolete pretty quick.
It sure feels like it. when it comes to business desktops and servers and kind of the core technology, we plan on a solid 5-year lifespan. So if you want your equipment to work all the time, if you're replacing it every 5 years, almost like a car lease, then you will have equipment that is reasonably fast, works reasonably well. 5 years is pretty stable. After 5 years, then you're getting into borrowed time, where it might work and it might not. So if budgets are really tight and we just can't do it this year, we can push it out to 6 and maybe 7. And crikeys, we've worked with 10-year-old equipment that is still functional and we're nursing it along, but it's dying a lot more often. But one of the things that I want to stress to our small businesses is that computers are cheap compared to your people. And so one of the sales pitches is, look at how much you're paying your person. Do the math and figure out what we're paying them over 5 years. And now look at that computer. This is the thing that they do all of their work on. If the computer is down for a week, there went a week of their salary because they're probably not getting a whole lot done. So when we look at the total cost of ownership compared to what the productivity that they enable, 5 years is pretty reasonable to be replacing the computer.
Jason?
What about on the software side of things? Is it something that you're seeing a lot of upgrades in as well over that period of time?
For the most part, most software will last you 5 years. But one of the trends that we're seeing is everyone is moving away from the perpetual licenses where you purchase it and you keep it forever. They're moving to subscriptions where you pay every month until the end of time, and then it's always current and always updated. Mm-hmm. I'm an old computer geek. I don't like that model. I like the model where you own the software, it works, and most importantly, it doesn't change until you tell it to. With the subscriptions, they're releasing new updates all the time, and that's part of the way they justify that subscription. But now we've got changes happening where this particular estimating software that automatically sent emails out doesn't work anymore because your email program got updated. So I'm not a big fan of the subscription model, but it certainly is the way of the world. So I will suck it up and and roll with the punches.
Andrew, I've got a question for you. Let's say somebody calls you up or they get onto your website and they make a contact. And they say, hey, I'm going to start a business. I want to start a business, or I have an existing business and we have this mess. We have computers that don't work. We have some pirated software. We have some old software. Just the whole thing needs to be gone through. Would you just kind of start to finish? So then would it be like almost like going to a doctor and having a physical? Do you go out there and say, hey, you could tell me what the problem is, but I'm going to have to see it.
Exactly. We're going to need to come out on site and really see how things are. We started this process just the other day with a manufacturing company that called us up and said, hey, we're looking to make a change in our IT services. We've got, 50 computers spread across 2 states, a couple of servers. And I said, that's great, but we need to come out and see it firsthand. And when we come out to see it firsthand, we realized that some of the equipment that they were using, particularly for their wireless, was pretty close to home-grade equipment. And so it was going to require a whole lot more work. And we were able to have that conversation up front and say, yeah, we can take over your IT support, but these are the things that are going to need to be corrected because we can't guarantee great performance if we're not using the right equipment. And so we're going to need to put together a schedule to start replacing this. And if you don't want to do that, then maybe we're not a great fit for you because we're going to be behind the eight ball. And that's going to slow down your manufacturing operations. And so we want to make sure we keep you running.
Sure. That's interesting. You know, it kind of goes back to an IT partner concept again, where whoever these manufacturers are that you're talking about are probably really, really good at what they make. And at NEDCO here, we're really good at the loan process and managing SBA credit situations. But we are not good with computers. We're not computer professionals. Nor do we even try to be. But one of the great things, and you've been with us for at least a decade, is that when you come in and you take a look at everything, and then in the partnership relationship, that you don't try and sell us something we don't need, because we wouldn't know. It'd be like a doctor selling a surgery to somebody that doesn't need it. You know, you're not trying to get us to upgrade to something or buy something that we just simply don't need. So there's a high level of integrity there at Dewey that we've really appreciated over the years, because we could be buying computers here every day if you told us to.
Yep, and again, that's why you really want to find that partnership and need to look at them as an ongoing relationship, not just someone that you call when it's broken, because they're going to steer you the right direction. And if you're working with somebody good, they're also going to have your best interest at heart, because great, we can sell you $100,000 worth of equipment, and then you're going to be so mad that we're done doing business. And that's a one-time sale. And a good IT partner, they're going to work with you on a regular basis. They're going to review what you have and kind of keep you updated so that there's not any huge surprises like, oh, by the way, you need to replace your server next week. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you that heads up that, hey, it's getting old. It's getting about time. We need to start looking at putting that in the budget for next year so that we can get that done.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about being a loan officer here is that I get to, first, little snapshot, learn about a business, and I get to learn about the ins and outs of a business I had no idea about. I'm wondering if it's similar for you with your customers, if you start to learn the ins and outs of their business and how the IT kind of fits within what they do.
Absolutely, and I love it. That's one of the things that I love about our business and what we can do. We have to know what you're doing with your business. What's important to you? How do you use these computers? And what are some ways that you can use it better? So we have to understand a little bit about what you're doing. One of the things that I love working with all of our small business owners that are passionate about their business. And we've got a woodworking shop that we work with. They do some amazing work. And I'm sure that I could build the desk that they built. Mine would look horrific and take, 72 hours, and they put the thing together in, 2 hours to start to finish with master craftsmanship. And I really appreciate that skill set. So that's one of the things that we hammer into all of our staff is, you might think you're a smarty pants because you know a lot about the computer and everybody needs a computer. So that makes you smarter than them. But try for a day to do what they're doing and they'll put you in your place. And you'll realize that you might be good at the computers, but you're no good at the woodworking or the stone castings or any of the trades that we work with. And I absolutely love that diversity working with everyone. But like you said, we have to understand a little bit about your business and your processes and how you get things done so that we can make sure the computers are working at their best for you.
Mm-hmm. All of us here at NETCO are past our time to really become as much in depth with the knowledge of computers like you are, like coding, things like that. But for young people coming up and starting to learn to code at a very young age and somebody who's looking to get into the computer service, what are some things that they need to learn starting at a young age and then grow that as they move on? Well, would it be coding? Would it just be learning the basic applications?
IT is such a wide field anymore with everything that computers and servers do. One of the most important parts are problem solving, because that's what we do. We happen to do it with computers and technology, but the core problem solving isn't much different in you're looking at the problem and you're looking at, hey, here's the three normal ways we can fix it, and what are two out-of-the-box ways that we can fix it, and which one works best for this solution? So any sort of the math and the problem-solving skills really help out. Computer programming is awesome, but it definitely takes you down a different road. So everybody in IT should have some basics. And so a couple of basic computer programming courses will help you to understand how things work behind the scenes. So when they're broken, you've got a better idea how to work with the folks that do it. But the computer programming crew tend to be introverts. They tend to be people that focus on their craft, and they kick out some great things, but a lot of times they're not as social. When you're in the general IT, where you're helping with all sorts of computer problems, you really have to be a more social person.
Okay, and that's one thing I guess I should have distinguished there between programming and IT. Those are two different things.
Programming kind of falls under the hat of IT, but they're also kind of their own little splinter. So in a previous life, I was a GIS systems programmer, and so that was me, and I was that guy. And I put my headphones on, and I grabbed my half gallon of Dr. Pepper, put it on my desk, and just went to town and wrote some really cool things with the company I was working with at the time. But it was not very interactive. you have your piece and you work on it, and you work with your team to divide up the programming tasks, but it's not the same social interactivity. Interestingly, went to the Microsoft campus a couple years ago and did lunch in one of the employee cafeterias because I've got a cousin that works up there. You can order your food and get your food without ever talking to a person. And this was years before we're seeing it kind of roll out to the public. You would walk up to a kiosk, you would tap it in, slide your badge, and then 3 minutes later, your number would come up, and you didn't even have to make eye contact with a human in order to get your food. And that was really catering to the atmosphere that they had there.
So for somebody to be successful in this world, do they need to have a degree? Or it helps?
It certainly helps, but the aptitude really goes a long way. So because things are changing so much in terms of doing the IT work, you really have to be a self-learner or self-taught through everything that you do. The degrees normally help in other areas. So they might help you if you have a marketing degree. It helps you to be a better marketing IT person because you understand what they're doing, or to have your business degree or your management degree to do those parts, because you can't have just a computer guy. You have to have the rest of the business functions that wrap around it. But okay. In terms of computer degrees, if someone's looking to get into it, if someone's coming right out of college right now, I would take a look at the community colleges. They have some great technology programs, and we're looking at 2 years associate's degrees, just like it's a trade school at that point. And you walk out with a great foundation, and you can walk into these jobs because everybody is looking for qualified IT people. And that's the way to get in the door and to get they'll never make you an expert, but they'll give you a foundation that you can build on. So when we're looking at resumes and people coming in, we are looking at, hey, do you have trade school? Do you have those basics? What courses did you take? And more importantly, what did you like or not like about those courses? And that tells you how you're going to fit. Because in a computer information technology degree, like we have here at the local community college, there's a wide range from programming to some electronics repair to networking and computers and servers. And there's a huge wide variety, which is great. You get all of that exposure coming out of it. But you'll find that there's something that you like more than the rest of it. And that's where, ideally, you'd like to find a job. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody had a degree from a community college or they were self-taught, when you're going to hire them, can you tell just by talking to them that, hey, they know their stuff, they're going to be good? Or do you put them through a computer test and say, hey, fix this or something like that?
Well, I can't give out all my secrets, but absolutely. When I'm sitting down, so typically, at least for the second interview, I'm going to sit in and we're going to ask some technical questions and we're going to ask some things out of left field and out of right field. We're going to ask some crazy stuff. And what I'm looking for is, you know, do you know these? How much do you know of the background, even if you don't know the full answer? And how do you react when you don't know the answer? Beyond that, once a tech tells me, yeah, I know everything about servers, we go ahead and we fire up a lab environment. And we say, okay, here's a server. I need you to add a user. Here's their username. Add an email address. And then when you're done, we need you to add a group policy and a firewall rule.
Oh boy.
And we call their bluff on the spot. And you can really see how people work through it, particularly when we have, for instance, a firewall that most people haven't worked with. And someone that knows it inside, knows firewalls in general inside and out, will roll with the punches pretty well. And someone that doesn't, you really get to see their troubleshooting process. And that's part of what we're looking for is what happens when you don't know the answer. And there's no reason they can't Google it. So then you can watch them go and hit the search engine and see what they're looking for. And it really gives you a good feel for their knowledge. So in about an hour, I can get a really good feel for where they sit on the scales and where their knowledge is.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. One of the things that seems to be all-encompassing from the businesses I work with on loans is that they talk about the need for qualified employees. With what you're seeing in the next generation coming up through, Are they getting into the IT fields that have a direct correlation to what you guys do? Or are you seeing more people, you know, I want to build an app and I've got knowledge in some website design, not fixing computers, not hardware, not software, not what you actually do? Is there a lack of trained, qualified employees out there in the labor pool?
Oh, there certainly is. One of the things that we're seeing is that everybody needs IT support staff. So if you're an IT company like us, we need IT technicians to go help us take care of our customers. But then you run into the bigger enterprises, and they need those same people in-house. And so there is a lot of competition for those folks. A lot of times what we see is someone that grew into the role organically, someone who showed up at the company, and they were the person that knew computers best, so they were tasked with kind of handling the computers for that company and kind of growing into that role. And then they sat down with the book, and they figured out how to make this server work. And then they needed a firewall, and so they searched it, and they spent 14 hours figuring out how to add a basic firewall rule. But once they did, now they know it. And so a lot of the folks that we see, they grow in their knowledge as those tasks are given. And we're really looking for what do you like? Because as an IT provider, we've got a lot of different roles and a lot of different things that can be done. We're trying to find where people are a good fit. And if you love servers and hate people, great. We've got a server administrator position where you can work on that and barely talk to people. And if you really like people and like working with the things that they're doing, well, that puts you in a desktop support role. And all of those are equally important. But we find that a lot of those people get their foot in the door by being in the right place at the right time and not hating technology.
One of the things that we've been seeing here is some businesses from COVID have been struggling mightily, hotels, you know, things like that, restaurants. How has COVID impacted your business? Just off the top of my head, I would think that it has provided you maybe a boost because people are starting to work from home and need more IT support. Is that the case, or what have you been seeing, and how has COVID affected you?
Well, I think like most businesses, COVID has turned our world upside down. We had tons of projects and things coming that have all postponed or canceled. We had offices that were forced to close by regulations. And so all of a sudden we weren't doing network installs or server installs. And at the same time, everybody wants to work from home, and so we're scrounging everywhere we can to find laptops and equipment and policies and training for people to do that. So for our business, we were pretty steady through it, but it really turned everything upside down, and everything we were expecting to do in the next 3 months all went out the window, and a whole new pile of stuff landed at the same time. So it's one of the things that COVID is definitely changing is the need for people to be in the office, because what we have seen is this migration where everybody can work from home, or at least a lot of professionals can work from home, and companies are finding, hey, that's maybe not a bad thing. And so we're trying to wrestle with how do we keep people to efficiently work from home. At my desk in my office, I've got 5 screens, and I've got a keyboard and a huge desk, and I've got this whole setup, which is ideal for what I need. And when I go home, I have a measly 2, and it's just not as efficient in what I'm doing. And so companies are kind of looking and balancing that against, okay, so maybe they won't be able to do quite as much, but they also shave 2 hours off their commute, an hour each way, and we can get some more time that way and end up with happier employees. So we're really seeing a shift where remote working, I think, will be expected everywhere, where companies or employees will expect to be able to work from home when necessary, and definitely an employee perk where maybe 2 to 3 days a week, staff will be able to work from home for various reasons. And that's changing because now you have to not only remote into the office, but you have to keep the bad guys from remoting into the same office, and definitely changing the landscape.
That's probably a whole new area of expertise is...
It's definitely changing.
Work from home, remote working security.
Yep, and we're looking at things like trying to struggle with, well, do we give every employee a computer to take home? Because that's expensive to buy all the equipment. Or do we let them use their home computer, which might be infected with things we can't control? And for a small business owner, you're looking at it going, well, Pam wants to go work from home, and she's got a computer and dual screen, so why don't I just let her use her computer and remote into the office? And that seems like a great idea until you consider that her kids have been surfing for free music and free videos all day long, and they downloaded this thing to play this free music, and all of a sudden now there's these pop-ups, and secretly behind the scenes there's something stealing every key that they type and sending it off to the attackers overseas who are looking for it. So now when they get into your computer, or when you go and you remote into your office computer, they're watching everything that you type and they can go replicate that. So how do you prevent that? And that's definitely one of the challenges that we're seeing is balancing, hey, I don't want to buy a second set of equipment with all the cost, not only the equipment, but the software and everything that goes into it. But at the same time, I don't want to open my company up. And so that's one of those things that we're helping companies balance. We've had two different approaches. We've had companies that we bought equipment, computers, monitors, keyboards, the whole nine yards, and sent it home so their people could be at home and just as efficient. And we've also had companies that set up much more elaborate security so that their staff could remote in from home. But when they do, it pops up on their phone and says, hey, is this you? Every time. And if you don't answer it, then it's assumed that it's not. And if it keeps popping up, you can assume somebody somewhere has your password and the IT staff can go track it down and go deal with it. So it's definitely changing how we see remote access. And in enterprise, we've had this forever. We've had VPNs and everything for big corporate customers. But in small business land, we haven't seen as much of that. We have it, but not to the same levels. And we're really stepping up our game across the board with our small business customers to make sure they have those same protections and to make sure it's only easy for you and not for the bad guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Andrew, on the next show, we're going to have Andrew be a recurring guest on the show. And we've talked to, he's just learning about that now. But I know there's going to be a big demand for what Andrew has to say. And then on the next show, we'll have a feature with Andrew on, and if you could develop a list of the top 10 do's and don'ts of working remote from home.
Like well, I got them right here. It's right on this piece of paper.
Right there. Almost like a David Letterman list for the next time that we have you on the show as a guest, which will be quite soon. So if you're looking for a reliable, affordable, knowledgeable IT partnership, it's Andrew Dewey. Take a look at Andrew Dewey, www.dewey.biz, and he can be reached at 402-475-3839. Andrew, thanks a million for being on the show, and we look forward to having you back on the show. Great job.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
This has been a production of the Nebraska Economic Development Corporation. All rights reserved.